Welcome to the Learning Reinvented podcast, brought to you by myself, Katie Godden, and the team from The Learning Effect. There are lots of learning podcasts out there, so we wanted to do something slightly different. This week, we're discussing how to deliver experiential learning. I'm delighted to welcome Mark Marula to the podcast. Thank you for joining me, Mark. Would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Absolutely. My name is Mark Marula. I'm live or pre-recorded from Ottawa, Canada. It's great to be here. And I've been in the team building world for about 26 years. My company's name is TBMOQ, which stands for Team Building Montreal, Ottawa, Quebec. And I've also started another division called Beyond Team Building to access the rest of the world. My specialty is experiential learning, which is, I'm sure, what we'll be getting into a lot in this interview.
Thank you very much for joining me, Mark. So could you tell us a bit more about how you've come up with your businesses, how long you've been doing them, what inspired you to create them?
Sure. So as with a lot of businesses, there was a little bit of luck involved. I started off when I was in university. I was studying education at McGill University in Montreal, and I had a passion for outdoor adventure. So I started teaching whitewater kayaking with a group of friends, and we were teaching it through the university to make a little bit of extra money. And when you teach a sport like kayaking, we were teaching it in a pool, not in white water just yet, because it was winter in Montreal. And a lot of it is hands-on learning, right? Yeah. So a lot of it is hands-on learning and experiential learning. So you learn by doing, you learn by this repetition, but the repetition you do, you want to make sure that you're doing it properly so that you practice the right actions. And I started, as I said, I fell in love with outdoor adventure, and I also fell in love with running a business. So when I graduated from university, some friends and I started a kayaking school called H2O Adventures. And from there, we were doing whitewater kayaking, sea kayaking. I was also teaching wilderness first aid, which my job was to teach people how to keep patients alive in remote areas until they got to definitive care. So they either got to the hospital or ambulance got to them or paramedics, but my job was to teach them how to do that, to manage wounds and the scene as well, so that they, not only the patients survive, but the rescuers survive as well, or the rest of the group. So that was a lot of learning, a lot of using experiential learning to help make theory more accessible to people. And that's how my love for experiential learning came about. Fast forward a couple of years and a little bit of debt later, I needed to make some money to pay off some equipment that I had just purchased. I had recently graduated from university, and it wasn't very much debt. It was like $5,000, but $5,000 on top of university and starting off in business, it felt like a huge mountain to climb. And I got a phone call just out of the blue from what's called a destination management company. So these are companies, or event planners as well, they're called. And they were putting together an event for a retail company that was bringing 100 of their top salespeople from around the world to Montreal to do an incentive trip. And part of that incentive trip was to do a team building. And at the time, adventure races were really getting popular, and the show Survival was also starting off. It was in its early stages. So they asked if we could do that. My mandate was to, you know, have the people walk off the bus at 9 o'clock in the morning and crawl back on at 4. So it's really old school team building, where, you know, the president really wanted to see everybody absolutely exhausted by the end of it. And he asked if I could do it. So I said, sure. And we did. We offered some sort of an adventure race that incorporated some canoeing, some kayaking, some hiking, some rock climbing. And it was the birth of the team building for me. The participants loved it. I loved doing it. I made a bit of money off of it. And I thought, this is something that blends my passion for education, outdoor adventure, and business. So I thought, what a perfect mix. Over the years, I realized that outdoor adventure is not necessarily the best medium for everybody in a company. There are people that have real fears of the outdoors, have physical limitations and capabilities. So I want to develop programs that are accessible to everybody. And so I started a division of my company of H2O Adventures called Team Building Montreal. And well, the rest is history. We've run well over 1,000 programs for companies around the world, especially since virtual became popular. But we've run a lot of programs, and experiential learning is my medium.
Well, that sounds really interesting. It sounds like you've had a broad background in regards to like what you've done and how you've got into it. Could you explain a bit more about experiential learning and what you mean by that?
Absolutely. I could use a quote from Confucius to explain what experiential learning is. Now, Confucius said years ago, he said it in Chinese, so I'll translate for you. What he said about learning is, tell me and I'll forget, show me and I may remember, involve me and I'll understand. So I come in at the point where it's time to involve people in a learning process. And in that involvement, you get a deeper understanding of the objectives or the key messages that a company is trying to share. You get a better understanding of what your purpose is as well. It helps people retain that information. It gets them physically and emotionally involved in the process, which in my experience has led to a greater retention of information and also a higher level of engagement by the participants. And that's a very important word, participants, as opposed to attendees or students. Like, this is participatory learning. So you're not expected to be just sitting back saying, okay, well, what do you have to show me today? You really have to get involved in the process.
Why do you think that type of learning is important for the corporate world?
Well, a lot of people, and this is of no fault of theirs, misunderstand the difference between an activity that's meant just to be for fun, which is called team bonding, and an activity where there's some learning purposes, some outcomes that are expected, which is team building. They think like a lot of suppliers that offer activities, group activities, will label it team building, as opposed to team bonding or just a fun group activity. The difference between the two, if you just want to gauge it very quickly, in team bonding activities, you do a group activity. You're just doing something together as a group. In team building and experiential learning, you're accomplishing something as a team. And that accomplishing something makes the experience much more purposeful and the lessons learned sustainable. So that's a big difference between the two. And it's something that I struggle with every day, because people call and say, well, we want to do team building. And I ask them, well, what did you do last year? Or what have you done in the past? And they'll say, well, we went go-karting, we went bowling, we played paintball. And I'm like, okay, well, those are fun activities. But if you really want team building, if you want to work on communication, collaboration, accountability, taking responsibility, continuous improvement, managing change, if these are really the elements that you're trying to teach or to explore with your group, then you need a team building activity, not, you know, try to hunt each other down with paintballs. Like that's not going to work. It could be fun, but it's definitely not team building. So why is it important? It's important because it makes an impact. It's important because it includes everybody in the process. When it's well structured, everybody finds a role within the, whether it's a simulation or an activity. And there are no wallflowers. If you step back and just observe, then you're doing yourself a disfavor and you're doing your team a disfavor. So the importance of it is really lies in the results. So basically, the more you put into it, the greater the results and the more sustainable the results.
I can really see the benefits of doing more team building as opposed to just doing fun activities, because obviously you're then able to realize people's experience, pros and cons, what they like, what they work best at, etc. Far more better than, like you said, shooting people with paintballs. Why do you think it's really important to be building strong teams within a corporate organization?
Well, one of the biggest challenges that we have as individuals is we want to have a sense of belonging, right? Once you have a sense of belonging, productivity shoots up. People who have, there are some studies have shown that that people who, when they have a lack of belonging, when they don't feel like they really belong or are contributing to the impact of the team, their productivity goes down. And that could go down as much as 10%, right? Which doesn't seem like a lot, but 10% over the course of a year represents what, 25 days. Multiply that by your daily salary, and that's a lot. That's a lot of money that's essentially wasted by the company. But not only that, not only is it the money that's wasted, it's the brain power and the contributions that that employee could have within the organization. So since belonging is such an integral part of our needs as human beings, it would be wise to have sessions, training sessions, and even some social sessions. Like the team bonding has its purpose. But if you can integrate more of the collaborative aspect and the high level of engagement in the training, then that spills over to the daily workplace. And the hope is that that deeper sense of belonging will lead to more productivity. Now, I use the word hope very precisely because hope is not a strategy. And the long-term effects of a team building or any learning session will be proportional to how much you apply it after the training. So a lot of groups will do something that's fun. They'll all high-five each other, walk away with smiles, feel charged and motivated. And then within a few days, it's back to the status quo, because nobody took charge of implementing the insights and the promises that they made to each other about with regards to actions and behaviors that they were going to take moving forward in order to reach their objectives. So there's the activity, but the activity of the team building should be part of a larger strategy of employee engagement. Don't just use it as a one-off.
So are you working with your clients in order to find out what they want to improve, and then you can apply that to what you offer them, I guess, essentially?
Yes.
So they're getting the right thing out of what you're helping them with.
Yes, that's a very important comment you just made, because it makes the difference between being an advisor and being a supplier. A lot of, if you're a manager and you're looking to create a deeper synergy within your team and improve productivity, then you should be looking for somebody who's going to advise you on what's best for your team, not a supplier who's going to be able to just help you check a box and say, yeah, we did team building. And that's a mistake that managers often make. It's not just the action of doing something together. It's the, as I mentioned earlier, it's accomplishing something as a team that will have positive residual effects moving forward.
So you've alluded to some of the data that you're using, obviously, out of this, and mm-hmm. I think that helps along the way with this process. Do you
yes.
have people that come to you that they might put their team on for whatever reason? So I don't know if it's communication, for example. Mm-hmm. And then are you able to then measure that using the data? But then do they come back at a later time to see if that's been applied properly or any improvements can be made?
That's it. Yeah. So it's unfortunately not part of, how can I put this? I don't know if it's not part of our culture or part of a desire. People really like to just, they like to have the one and dones. As much as I push to have a follow-up or help them measure what the results are, like with a, you know, a phone call later, it's like everybody's so busy. So they just want that magic pill. I could say, though, like if I was to look back at the stats of people who come back to me, over 50%, like there's sometimes where it hits in the 60% points of the business that we get is due to either repeat business or referrals from other clients. So that's an indication that we are making an impact, but it's not concrete. Like some of the ones that we've done, where we've had the strongest impact are the ones that set a strategy, a plan, not just for one program, but for a few. And then we could build on it. We could build on the themes over time and allow them to practice the insights that they gain through each experience, rather than just try to bulldoze the whole experience in a 3-hour block and then move on to something else, and maybe see each other 2 years from now.
I think it's a really interesting comment that you made about doing that kind of gradually and that process being broken down into chunks, because I've had several conversations with people recently that have got the same method about how they deliver their training, learning, whatever that they're delivering. And the people that just go in, do the tick box, the impact isn't as greater as the people that are doing it in a smaller chunks over that longer period. So they've got that time to apply what they're learning to their everyday lives and make those changes. I think you can't change things overnight. It's not going to work like that. So breaking it down, I think that goes back to the corporate organization, that they need to be putting that into their learning strategy to be able to work alongside suppliers with whatever they're supplying to be able to then strategize that a little bit better.
Due to the new reality that most businesses have, where they either have distributed teams or hybrid offices, people don't see each other face to face as much as they used to in the past. And so there's a resistance to do something that will lead to awkward moments, frustration, and doubt within the participants. Those are things that people are trying to avoid. But I tell them that that's an integral part of experiential learning. You're going to feel something. There's going to be emotion involved. And when you feel that, that's a trigger. It's not necessary. It doesn't have to be a negative trigger. It's got to be something that you could do. You could do something, behave a different way, take different actions if you want different results. That's all part of experiential learning. So the resistance to have a situation where people are frustrated is actually doing a disservice to the team. There are six? It depends on where you're reading. But Tuckman had these five stages of team development. He had forming, storming, norming, performing, and most recently added adjourning. So those are the five. Now the forming is when you put the team together. And people, there is doubt in that when you're a new team, you're going to be feeling like, okay, well, what's my role here? Why is she here? What's the purpose of having him here if I could already do that? And we've been doing it this way all this time. So there's a lot of doubt in that forming stage. And as a manager or a team leader, you have to make sure that that's when you're very clear on what the purpose is, what the objectives of the team is or are, why you're together going towards a common goal. And so you align the team. That's in the forming stages. The next stage, and you can't skip this. You can't skip it. It's called storming. And the storming is where you have that conflict, where you have that frustration, where it boils over and people are starting to argue, or even worse, they're starting to become disengaged and not caring as much. When you see that, that's the magic moment where you could start having the important conversations, agreeing on a set of norms, a set of ways that you're going to work together most effectively in order to reach your objectives. Acknowledge what people are bringing to the table and help others combine that knowledge so that you create a new team. Like, this is your new team. This is your new reality with your set of norms, the promises you make to each other on how you're going to work together. And when you have those norms, so that's the norming stage. Once you get through that, then you get into the performing stage. So you can't skip the frustration. You can't skip the conflict. You have to work through it. And that's what experiential learning helps you do.
And I think that's an important and a normal part of life as well, to experience that, whether that's in your everyday life, in your personal life or in your work life. You are going to hit bits that are frustrating, that are annoying to you, and you've got to work through those. And I think if you take that away from learning and training, purely because you don't want to make people feel uncomfortable, you're not making it authentic and you're not making it relatable to everyday life. So how are you then going to be able to apply something when you haven't been able to experience that in their kind of training setting, I guess?
Exactly. It's too easy. The easy path is a PowerPoint presentation. That's easy. Mm-hmm. That we know the results. We know some people are going to be engaged and others aren't, but nobody's going to Very few times will people ever walk out of there crying or being upset about something. Like it's a presentation. It's passive learning. It's important. It's like sharing information is important. Don't get me wrong. The PowerPoints, the town halls, those are important components to an overall strategy. But it's when you get it's all part of the telling and showing. So tell me and I'll forget. Show me and I may remember. Involve me and I'll understand. The three become a strategy towards a deeper learning, a deeper understanding, and sustainable learning within a team.
Definitely. I completely agree with you, because I think once you've experienced something, that's something that you're not easily going to forget, because mm-hmm. you've been through that. You know, like it's easy to forget information that's being read to you or you've read yourself. So completely agree with you on that one. What challenges? Like, obviously, we're going through challenging times at the moment. Like here in the UK, we're going like into a recession. There's lots of things happening in the world. What challenges do you think that your clients are facing to make them come to you and ask for your training?
Yeah, so a lot of the time, most recently, it's there's so much newness, so many new faces. They just want to get people to know each other better. That's the one of the main asks. We want to get to know each other better. We want to bridge the gap between the older people, the people that have been around the company, because you can be young and still have been in a company for a long time. But yeah. we want to bridge that gap between the new hires and the people who've been here for a while. There's a lot of change, and with that change comes some resentment. So I get that a lot. But then again, they identify that people need to have this sense of belonging and getting to know each other better. And the default is, let's just go do something fun. Let's do something together and the rest will work itself out. Unfortunately.
It's a bit forced fun in my mind, doing things like that. I always find, so like if you're made to do something, so if you're new to a team or the team's newly formed or whatever that might be, forcing people to go and have fun in a fun environment is a bit fake, because you might find bowling extremely fun, for example, but I might not. Exactly. So for me, that's not fun. So it's not natural and it's not authentic. And I find that more awkward than situations where you're having to actually do something to get an outcome, to achieve something together, to problem solve together, to do all of those things. That's way more interesting and has more of an impact on me personally from my experience than just going somewhere just to do something fun. Exactly. In quotations.
Well, that's the thing too, now that we're being, you know, if you're being required to come into work to do something with the team, to do something. Well, oftentimes when we're doing something that we don't like to do, we're thinking that we'd rather be doing something else. Mm-hmm. Right? Whereas if you're being brought in for a purpose, this is what we're going to accomplish as a team within the next few hours. This is the purpose of our meeting. This is how it's going to benefit us long term. And here's your opportunity to contribute to the direction and alignment that we need in order to get to where we want to go. So that's purposeful. That's accomplishing something. If you go back to the bowling or the team bonding, you also have a situation, you mentioned it, of something that's fake. Yeah. And it's a fake harmony. Like, you could show up at an event where you're going to be doing something with colleagues and put aside your differences and nod and smile. And for the betterment of the group, you know, you don't want to rock the boat. You just smile and you get through whatever you're doing. In team building, when you have a seasoned facilitator, when you have an experienced facilitator, she or he is able to identify that fake harmony and encourage people to consider that, not in a way that's disrespectful, challenging, where you're putting somebody up against the wall and they feel like they're like, you know, no, it's you've basically got to call out the elephant in the room. Right now, everybody's nodding their heads and nobody's rocking the boat, but you may be able to accomplish this task, but so what? Because there's something underlying here that needs to come to the surface. So you get them to think about what fake harmony is And then it starts coming out. That's another magic moment where people don't feel threatened. They're just like, yeah, you know, I am. I'm not putting my 100% into this because my mindset is I just want to get through it and I don't want to rock the boat. But if I don't rock the boat, if I don't share my insights and my experience, well, then I should have nothing to complain about after, because here was my opportunity. I want people, right from the beginning, I'm a big fan of people taking responsibility for their actions and behaviors, taking responsibility for the results, and taking responsibility for also ensuring that other people are benefiting from the program. That's why I'm not a big fan of surveys. Like at the end, you know, how was your day? Did you enjoy the training? Like, but first question that should be asked in the surveys is, what was your mindset when you walked into the room, and what was your intention? How did you prepare to contribute to this day? You got to put them in the driver's seat. Make them understand that, or help them understand that they're responsible for the outcomes.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that's the powerful message to people, isn't it? They've got to be their authentic selves. They've got to take accountability for themselves and understand their impact on other people as well. And it's okay to feel that little bit awkward and have those differences. And that's totally normal. And that's a way of life. And it's kind of facing up to that as well. And it's a difficult thing to do for people. But if you're able to do that, your team's going to work a lot better together.
Absolutely. But then the test happens, you know, like when the program's over. A lot of people could walk out of there. They're going to, and it's human nature that, especially the people who've been around for a while, they'll be like, you know, this is great. I feel energized, but I'll believe it when I see it. And so the moment the program ends, then the eyes are on the management team. Okay. So we said, we're going to do this, this, and this. As a manager, if you don't do it, overlook it, tweak it a little bit to fit your needs, and it's not what was expected, that's when you start losing credibility. And so it is a process, and it requires commitment. If you're going to be doing this type of learning where the impact is massive, it's a huge impact. It's way larger than just dictating and telling people what the vision is. Like, have them experience it, have them understand it, have them know how they could contribute every single day to meeting those objectives. But as a manager, you have a role of sustaining that momentum and delivering on the promises that you made during the session.
Yeah, exactly. They've got to be accountable for that, and obviously keeping that consistent as well, because otherwise you are going to get those pessimistic people that are going to hold you to account anyway. Mm-hmm. So,
you know what I like doing with the pessimistic people? Because you can tell who they are, and they don't hide it very well. They're the ones who like to, they're the yeah buts. Yeah, but this or that. And then, so you challenge them, say, look, we want to know, we want to know how we could get it. You guys want to know how you could get additional funding for X technology. So you put that person in charge. You know, you say, okay, you got to, you know, you give them, you set a path for how they could be successful, but like you could delegate as a manager. You could also delegate. You don't have to take 30 sheets of whiteboard, not whiteboard, but what's it called? Post-it notes.
Flip chart's
the word. Thank you. Yes, it's the same word in Canada. So yes, flip chart. You know, and try to consolidate it. Like, get a committee, get people involved, so that it goes faster and it's more efficient, and you continue that buy-in. So there's buy-in, but then there's the actions. Don't take all the actions on your own shoulders. Delegate it. It's part of the team. The team's gonna support those initiatives that need to be done in order to stay aligned and reach the objective.
No, definitely. So, what does your future look like in regards to your businesses?
It's a good question. We're seeing a lot more virtual or hybrid type of programs where you have people that are, you know, they could be in San Francisco and have people in Singapore or Australia or the UK. And rather than fly everybody together on a yearly basis, they're going to do events that, like they'll do team building events or experiential learning programs to help solidify the team and reinforce their objectives and alignment. So we do see that, and I'm excited about that because I do enjoy facilitating virtual events. We did well over 750, maybe even close to 1,000 virtual team building events in the last 4 years. So that that was big. That was a big change. I mean, we went from doing 175 live events, like in-person events pre-COVID. That's what we would do in a year on average. And then we hit 450 virtual events in one year during COVID. And 100 of those events were in 1 month. Like it was crazy. The need that people had to feel connected, a sense of belonging, understanding what their role is within the organization or within the team. So that type of support, I could see myself doing very well. And the future, I'm on a mission now to, I don't want to be a supplier anymore. I don't want to be considered a supplier. I want to be considered a trusted advisor for team building, employee engagement, and corporate culture. I've earned it over the last 25 years. I've been wrong. I've made mistakes, and some of my biggest mistakes have led to the longest lasting clients relationships because I take responsibility for those mistakes, and that's what I've been doing. Another thing that I pride myself on is that yes is not my default, and people have a hard time with that. They want. You know, as a client, they want to believe that they're always right. But yes is not my default. I am willing to be challenged and challenge them to make sure that we get it right for their needs. So it does, it's a lot more difficult to build that type of relationship instead of saying, hey, you want a program? Here's the program. And just cut and paste and hope that something sticks. So through podcasts like this, newsletters that I publish, other posts, and meetings that I have with people, that's the message I want to get out there, is that if you want team building initiatives and experiential learning initiatives to work within your organization, stop looking for suppliers and start consulting with strategic advisors who will be honest, open, and have your back. If people don't use my services, that's okay. I want them to have an experience that they're going to benefit from, and then someday they might come back. But I want them to get it right. I don't want them to just check a box and then have a whole other problem later on down the road.
That's a really refreshing way of looking at things. And I don't speak to many suppliers that do think like that, because that's one of our ethoses at The Learning Effect. We always go back to the purpose of their business, essentially, not just the learning team. So it's not just that minute detail. It's the business as a whole. And we really understand the purpose of that. And we want to act as a partner and an advisor, as opposed to just supplying or just filling a gap or just ticking that box. So to hear another supplier that is working like that is really nice to hear. If people want to follow your journey get in touch with you and see what you're up to, how do they go about doing so?
LinkedIn. I've been very active on LinkedIn. This may have already happened once you publish this podcast. We're really excited about teaming up with retired athlete Bruni Surin, who's a really big deal in Quebec. He's a gold medalist in track and field, and he's also the chef de mission for Team Canada in Paris 2024. He's a motivational speaker, and we've been talking a lot about what teamwork and team building means. And we'll be publishing a lot of that content in the next few weeks. So, by all means, follow me on LinkedIn, and you'll see the journey continued. Start with the about me portion, because it starts off with a near drowning incident, and I'm sure it'll catch people's attention.
Perfect. Thank you very much for joining me, Mark, on this episode. It's been really great to talk to you, find out more about your businesses.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Learning Reinvented podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you've not already done so, please follow our podcast. And if The Learning Effect can help you and your organisation, please do get in touch. You can find both James and Katie on LinkedIn, and our contact details are in the show notes below.